And they continually get questions about other states are establishing laws that do give the courts more power, and other states are, you know, supposedly not losing federal funds. And she said that in consultation with the Central Office of Health and Human Services, that their procedures are correct. In other words, if they tell us that they would declare an audit exception and would disallow federal funds, that would occur. I don't know what has happened in California. That's not Region 10, where, you know, our region is.
There are no other states in Region 10.
No, Region 10 includes.
That have enacted.
Yeah, I really can't address that because I don't know.
Have you ever corresponded with Region 10 in writing on this?
Not on the amendments. I did ask them to get back to me if they had anything further that they wanted to say other than the telephone conversation that I made when they were first presented. I later, well, as you say, I did send them a letter including those amendments.
Right, and you've never heard from Region 10 in writing?
Not regarding those amendments,
okay.
No.
Well, of course, I'll always prefer to see some claim made about what the feds are going to do or not do. I'd like to see that in the form of a letter or communication from the federal government rather than relying upon just being told that. So, well, if you get something in writing, let us know, and I appreciate seeing what you said in your letter to Region 10, frankly. I'd really appreciate seeing that.
I believe that is...
Is that in the file?
In the packet that I delivered
that in
to
the file. That's the one that you're talking about. Okay,
yes.
Fine.
However, Mr. Chair, I
yes.
do note in Julie's material, 13 and 14, Washington Code, a reference to Washington Revised Code Section that... requires, the statute requires review by the court of the status of all dependent children at least every 6 months. So.
All right, thank you then.
I assume Washington's in Region 10 still.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
still.
Right. All right, I think that that takes care of all the witnesses on House Bill 3013.
But I don't know if she went to tell her ride.
No, she's going to ride home with Mr. Kramer. Well, we can. Okay, we're going to see what we can get done here. We'll take up. We'll go ahead and start a work session. Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Okay, Senator Brennan's been here, I think, since the beginning, and let's take a look at two or three of those early ones we heard and see if we can, we've got any problems with sending those out. How about, do you have any problems at all, Senator Brennan, with the first three on the list there?
No.
Okay. And what about the last one on the list, HB 3191? That's the violation expungement one.
No.
Okay.
No problem.
Senator Cohen's disappeared. As soon as she gets here, I would recommend those four. And then, taking a look at those that we are supposed to have work sessions on just today, I think I'll ask counsel to Council, would you tell the committee members the my proposal on, no, wait a minute, that's, yes, Mr. Eric, on Senate Bill 219, will you explain my suggestions on that bill?
Yes, the bill as it's drafted contains 10 or 11 separate policy choices.
There might be too much to deal with here.
Well, your proposal doesn't make all of them. What Senator Frey proposes to do, first of all, is clean up 192.500 by breaking it into three sections, and by deleting that section in the middle of now the middle of subsection 2. Each of you should have a memo in there with a marked up, a hand engrossed copy of what the bill would look like.
This is, I think Senator Hamby recalls from being on judiciary in a prior two sessions, I'm always complaining about every time we have to change the punctuation or add a code number in that section, we've got a tremendous large piece of work. So I've always felt that first chance we've got, we ought to break it up into separate sections. That's one part of it.
Yeah. Then in the middle of subsection 2, there's a paragraph that lists a whole bunch of specific sections. It's got, on my handwritten memo, it's got 3A marked out to the margin. What we would do is simply delete all those specific references so that every time another statute was brought in under the confidentiality part, this would not have to be amended. You simply say they're confidential or privileged under Oregon law. The next two things that are proposed are revisions to definitions of trade secrets and definitions of test questions, and they're labeled 2A and 2B in the margins. And then the final thing is the addition of a conditional exemption for computer programs which are developed or purchased by or for a public body for its own use. And the amendment that I've proposed contains an extensive notation as to what is not included in a computer program. And I did this after looking at another section of statute and consulting with the City of Eugene, the AG's office, and the State System of Higher Education. This exemption would not protect original data, so that, for example, property assessments that were in a computer system would not be confidential, but public could get at them like they can now. It would not protect analyses of data, so that if you use a program to produce some kind of analysis, the analysis is not confidential. And it would not protect the underlying logic that you use, what I've called the mathematical or statistical formulas, which would be used if the manipulated forms of the original data were to be produced manually. And what I was getting at there is if you compute an average,
yes,
sometimes it's important to know how the average is computed, and that is not protected. That's there because the City of Eugene, among others, is concerned about the cost that goes into developing programs by public bodies. And there is a brand new Attorney General's opinion just out that says that is all a public record, so that somebody could walk in, ask for the program, and then turn around and sell it, use it for free after the development costs are paid for by the taxpayers. And that's what they're trying to protect. There is a section O included in your memo dealing with writings prepared by faculty. That is being dealt with in House Bill 3224, which will probably be on the floor of the Senate tomorrow. So we don't need to deal with that proposed for paragraph O. So that's what's in Senator Frye's proposed amendments. They can be dealt with individually, adopted as a bundle. They really comprise, each one comprises a separate policy choice.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Brenneman.
Eric, is this letter from Higher Ed supportive of these? These are the amendments they're supportive of?
Yes, they are particularly speaking to the paragraph O that I had in your memo, and that comes from language they had submitted earlier. I have been notified that since they have amended or had the Senate Education Committee amend House Bill 3224, that they no longer feel a need for this amendment in this bill because they're essentially identical amendments.
I fear for the life of the other bill. And I would feel much more comfortable retaining this language.
Well,
sure.
All right.
But the other bill passed the Senate today, didn't it?
No, that didn't come up.
First bill up tomorrow. I think.
Well, okay.
Tomorrow, I should say.
I won't vote for it in this bill.
Pardon?
I will not vote for it in this bill.
No.
So.
Well, I wouldn't either. I prefer not to vote for it in this bill at my own viewpoint. Do you want to, what do you want to do? How do you feel on it, Senator Brown?
I'm feeling the same way as Senator Hanby does about that bill tomorrow. Perhaps that might be true. I think it's necessary, and I support that concept. I hope that House bill passes tomorrow. If they feel comfortable with it, Higher Ed here, and are supportive, and they're not going to feel like they have to rely on this, I'm willing to go ahead with this.
Mock up on Senate Bill 219. I don't want to rush anybody. I just had three folks here a minute ago when this was explained. I just wanted to find out if there were four votes for this form of 219, the way it was mocked up, or if they're not, why we'll just put it off and do something else with it one at a time. It was not acceptable, and we have to work on it. I think we'll just take care of a few that I think we can all agree on. Senator Cohen, do you have you had a chance to look at that to see if you've got any?
Well, again, it has been requested that Higher Ed has their needs met with another bill, and I'd vote for this bill the way without the Higher Ed piece in it.
Okay, well, that's right.
And that's all I'm saying, all right. And Senator Hanvey wants to have it included. I wouldn't support it in those.
If there are not the votes,
here, Senator Warren, on page 3. Senator Cohen and I would agree with her that the top paragraph, which is contained in the House bill that's coming up tomorrow, would be eliminated. I'll take a look at that.
Is this the bill that?
This is my suggestion on 219. Council's just gone through this.
This is a bill that was on the table or was before the committee a couple months ago and is currently on the table. Would require a motion to pull it off.
Is it on the table?
Yeah.
I see.
And then a motion to amend however you want to amend it.
On the schedule a week or so ago, and I thought we pulled it off the table. Am I wrong?
Well, see, Senator, was that the time Senator Crow testified, or different?
Yes, it was. He came in very briefly at the beginning.
I don't know.
My recollection is that we ran out of time.
I don't recall whether we took it off the table or not. If people want to send it out, we'll go through that again. If there's any hesitation at this point, wait so we can spend some time on it.
No, I don't think. As far as I'm concerned, needs not to. I would vote to take it off the table. If you want to do that, I would also make the motion to delete on page 3 the sub-14 at the top of the page, and then I would be willing to support the bill as and if we want to do it that way, fine. You know, otherwise, I just respectfully don't know.
Well, fine. We'll see if we got.
And that's where I just want to let you know. So
you all right with you, Senator Hamby?
I'm comfortable. Yes.
Senator Brenneman?
Okay.
Okay, Senator Warren, if you had a chance yet to study that over or not.
Delete.
Well, isn't there, aren't the four of you, I'm just catching up. You're going to delete the first. Delete. I got that. But what does this Section 15 do? I remember what the concerns were about the bill the way originally. It says
it's a conditional exemption for computer programs, and by computer program, we're referring only to the instructions that make the computer operate. We're not referring to the data, original data. We're not referring to any analyses, and we're not referring to any of the underlying logic that's in the public domain, such as how you calculate an average or that kind of thing. It's to protect the set of instructions that allow the computer to operate.
How does that make the university happy?
Well, it makes the university happy. It also makes cities and counties happy because they have invested a good deal of time and money in developing.
Oh, we were talking about universities wanting to be able to do contract research without somebody coming along getting the data away from them.
That would have been, that was primarily to be covered in paragraph O up above. Paragraph, or 14, 15.
Somebody's gotten that into some other bill already.
Yes, that will be in 3224, which will be up tomorrow.
Cities and counties are mostly interested, I guess.
Cities and counties are interested in this because they put a lot of money into developing proprietary computer programs, and they're not interested. There's a brand new attorney general's out that says those are public records, which was my opinion also, and they're not interested in investing a lot of public money only to have somebody come along and ask for them and then be able to use them free. Have a private concern essentially use the public tax money to do their computer development work for them. So that's the purpose of this. As you may recall also, the conditional exemption provides an exemption only so long as there's not an overriding public concern. And if somebody can come along and show an overriding public concern, even things that have that conditional exemption can be made public. So this is not something that's absolutely protected forever once it gets into the statute.
And the other thing that this proposal does, which I've always been interested in, takes that section of Chapter 192 and just breaks it into three pieces so we don't have to, every time you make a small amendment in that big section, you don't have to print a book to do it. Okay? All right. If Senator Cohen moves to take Senate Bill 219 off the table, any objection? That's so ordered. And Senator Cohen would move to amend Senate Bill 219 mock-up dated 529 by deleting Arabic number 14 at the top of page 3. Any objection to that? That's so ordered. Any other amendments anyone wants to propose? All right, Senator Cohen would move Senate Bill 219 before, as amended, do pass. Any discussion on that? Call a roll on that, please.
Brenneman?
Aye.
Brockman? Cohen?
Aye.
Hamby?
Aye.
Hill?
Wires?
Aye.
Fry? Aye. Okay, now, just before you came in, Senator Wires, let's take the Senate Bill 984. Senate Bill 984. Senator? Did you have something, Council?
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just to refresh you, this is the bill that would allow the court to order a pre-sentence physical examination of the defendant to determine if the defendant would be well-suited toward medical sex offender treatment. The only real issue in the bill is whether the committee wants to take any steps to extend that same procedure to indigents. That
I don't seem to have a copy of that.
We have an extra copy of 984. That might have a fiscal impact if we did that particularly so late in the session. As I indicated to the committee, there's no problem with the court ordering treatment after sentence for those who could afford it, but there may be a problem in confining the availability of this procedure to persons who could afford the test prior to sentence.
I thought that bill kind of sunk at hearing when somebody came in and said that somebody had been turned down in Washington County because they couldn't afford the test.
Mr. Chair?
Now, Senator Hamby, go ahead.
Yeah, that was correct. That was the testimony from the parole board, which, of course, supports the bill. However, on hearing that testimony, if you recall, the other witness that day was the director of the Washington County Mental Health Program, and he approached the spokesperson for the parole board. And in fact, by late that afternoon, he had found local county dollars to assist in the testing. By the way, Mr. Chair, my apologies for coming into the committee meeting late this afternoon. I was meeting with our new chief of corrections. By the way, in New Mexico, they used this. I was not aware. The Deborah Barrett. And in fact, it was the first case filed against the correction system in New Mexico when a sex offender was released on parole and murdered a three-year-old rapist and murdered. And he turned around and filed suit against New Mexico for not giving him Depo Provera.
Maybe we're not ought to vote
Remember
for
that?
This bill.
Pardon me? So he's most familiar.
Changing my mind on this bill.
That's innovative.
No, he's most familiar with the treatment because of the New Mexico program.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Warren.
We tried to do something for Deborah Provera before, which ran aground on money, and I would be a little hesitant to take action on this without having somebody on the record telling us where they were going to get the money and how they were going to do it, as opposed to them telling Senator Hamby and her coming and telling us. That would not seem to be a very good way to decide that there's enough money to do something when the last time we had testimony, somebody said there wasn't.
All right, Senator Hamby, do you want
to? I think there are, X numbers of dollars of indigent funds and certain ways and means approached all during the session for additional. It just depends on the local county match. Washington County happens to include some dollars for programs like this, as they do for Ant Abuse and others. And certainly the judge, Multnomah County judge that helped draft the bill, felt it was important for those offenders that he sees going through this court that can well afford it. I'll move the bill.
He has moved 984. The floor do pass.
Further discussion?
Well, again, it seems to me it's a problem to have a bill where you are going to make something available to somebody if they can afford to pay for it. It says in the bill, at the person's own expense. It seems to me that sets up two classes right there. People who can afford it and who can't. I didn't quite catch what counsel said about what his opinion was about the legality of that. But,
The issue is whether the court could only apply this examination to persons who could afford it. Preferable procedure would be to allow the court to order it for anyone the court feels is appropriate. And to somehow find the money to do so for the indigent context. As I indicated, that has a fiscal impact. So it remains...
What about the constitutionality of allowing somebody to buy their way out of jail, which this arguably does, when others can't, who can't do it at their own expense? Did you look into that?
Well, I think it remains a problem in the pre-sentence context. After the examination, the courts have said, I'm going to put you on probation. You have to get this medical treatment. You find a way to pay for it. Courts do that frequently, but in this context where it's before the sentence and the judge says, I'm ordering you to undergo an exam, to apply it to one set of persons who could afford it, deny that to persons who can't, might be a problem. Now, the indigent defense funding allows a defendant or a defense attorney to request the court special expenses for an examination, but this is different because this is a court-ordered exam and not a defendant-requested exam. So I don't think the court, even if it wanted to, could draw upon indigent defense funds, wherever those funds are. It could take it out of its own budget, conceivably. I see Mr. Swank looking up.
Well, you say this could be a problem, but isn't indeed an obvious problem to say that before the sentence, you can qualify to get into a program that can lead to an alternative to incarceration if you can afford it?
I think it's a definite problem.
Yeah, too. I'm all in favor of getting people to get treatment, but it seems to me that that just obviously runs afoul of the Equal Protection Clause. I'm not a constitutional scholar, but I just stumble over that very hard. Mr. Chairman, longer than I have, don't you think it's pretty obvious that that sets up a two-class system here?
Well, I really haven't come to a conclusion. What I'm going to do, though, I'm going to vote to send this thing out of committee. If it gets out of committee, I'm not going to be committed to vote for it on the floor. But if Senator Hamby, I'll put the burden on her, I guess, to maybe to put together.
I would like to see it go to the floor, Mr. Chair, and then because of the lateness of the session, and certainly if on the House side willing to delete the reference to own expense. However, I am committed to having as many people pay for their own treatment as possible. I would be willing to have it go before the Ways and Means Committee at that point in time if there is, in fact, an increase in indigent costs.
Well, Mr. Chairman, since we're probably going to be debating this on the floor, I'd like to ask you if I could. Do you think that's constitutional?
I really haven't reached any conclusion on it yet.
But I will have reached. Doesn't sound like a very direct answer.
I will have reached a conclusion by the time I vote on it.
All right, Mr. Chair.
On the floor.
I suppose I can move to delete the applicant's own expense language found in both lines 9 and.
So go ahead, Senator Hamby. What are you saying?
That's it.
What are you doing? Are you making an amendment, or are you just talking out loud?
I'm amending the bill.
Okay.
And moving to delete the language found on page 1,
yes.
Line 9, at the person's own expense.
There is not a comparable provision in Section 4.
In the parole section, no. However, there was a typographical error on page 2, line 11. First word, probation. It should be consistent and be switched to parole since it deals simply
first,
with
the first
parole.
Word on line 11?
Delete probation and insert parole.
All right. Senator Hamby moves to amend Senate Bill 984 by striking from line 9 the words at the person's own expense and the two commas setting out that clause and substituting the word parole for probation, line 11, page 2. Any objection? So ordered. Senator Hamby moves Senate Bill 984 as amended. The floor do pass. Further discussion? Call the roll.
Brennan?
Aye.
Brockman?
Dollars?
Hamby?
Aye.
Hill? Myers?
Aye. Aye. That's carried. Now, let's go to House Bill 3374, and the chair would move that to the floor to pass. Discussion?
Did you move that, Mr. Chair?
I just moved 3374.
Okay.
Any discussion on that?
Call the roll.
What's this bill about?
Well, it's, I've got four bills that I'm going to move. This particular bill increases the damages from 200, is it 200?
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. This one deals with the Bureau of Labor.
This is the public accommodations.
Yes.
This is the No-Tie Tavern bill.
Right.
Good bill.
So this is the tavern where they put up some racist thing on the thing?
Yes. Senator Wires, what it does is give the Bureau a temporary cease and desist authority and also gives the Commissioner authority to levy civil penalties.
Fine, thank you.
Call the roll on that, please.
Brennan?
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Gandy?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
That carries. The next one is House Bill 2954. I guess Senator Brennan and I think, I don't know who else was here. Just the two of us were here.
Okay.
Wasn't this the one when he was here?